Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today on the Roundup, we're going to be taking a look at three questions we've been hearing from international educators this past week. This is the day after the election that we do not know the result of yet. There are many states still in the balance with extended deadlines for mail-in ballots. That absentee ballots that will be counted up until Friday in Pennsylvania, in North Carolina. The decisions in some states are in an unprecedented election in almost every way possible, where vote totals were for pre-election voting was more than double what had happened in 2016. And that has thrown this entire presidential race, as well as several key Senate races, and governorship races and local and state legislature races in the balance. So we don't know the answers yet, but there's been a lot of uncertainty for the last 4 years as to what international education is going to look like in the future, and there still is uncertainty. But we're going to take a look at some of the positive sides of today as we look at our questions today on the Roundup. We're going to look at a few of those items in the news that give us hope. And we, whatever the election results turn out to be, and hopefully by this time next week, we'll know that. I know a number of us, number of our colleagues that are getting ready for International Education Week, the week of November 18th, November 16th, excuse me, are busy getting their agendas together and have people that they're bringing in to speak about what the future might look like for international education. It's a little too early to know for certain, but certainly you couldn't have two more different approaches to running our country than you have on show in our presidential election. And we'll see how the final result will either make our lives considerably easier in terms of the daily stresses we have, worrying about what's coming next from an administration that has done many things to complicate the lives of international students as well as the international educators that support them. But we'll look at all of these and more as we go through today. And not every question is going to be answered today, as we won't know the results for a while. For those of you who are regulars to the Roundup, you may notice a very different background today. And that is Vincent Van Gogh's Starry Night. And wanted to change things up a bit today because there's a need for optimism in our country. And if the election results go one particular way, we will certainly have that optimism in our profession again that we haven't had for 4 years. We'll see what that looks like in the future, but we want to stay positive today. We're going to change things up with the background and certainly like the blue of the starry night background and the sun coming through, the moonlight, the sun. That is all projecting a sense of hope I have for what our future will be come next week when we'll know the election results. So let's get first to the questions. As you know, each week we take some of the topics that we cover in our weekly newsletter called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. That's social media and international ed news fit to share. I'm dropping the link to that this week's edition. Comes out on Mondays, 9 a.m. Dropping that current week's link in the comments section on the Facebook page. And we take three of the news stories or themes from the news stories, and we come to put up these questions each week that we try and answer for you during the Roundup. And this week, the first question of the day is how international students view our elections. Certainly, it's clear, obviously, unless you're a U.S. citizen, you don't have the right to vote, as our international students do not have that right. But they're still oftentimes they get the messages, they hear what the political ads, they hear everything that goes on campus. They hear what's in the news. They know how this election will impact them. They have a pretty good idea of which way they would like it to go. We shared results a couple weeks ago that polls seem to indicate international students, almost by 7-1, like 72% margin would prefer an administration that was headed by by Joe Biden, whereas less than 29% would favor President Trump having a second term. So what does that look like for international students? Are great, as many of you know, Karen Fisher at the Chronicle of Higher Ed. She's their global affairs, global education writer. She's got her own newsletter called Latitudes that covers many of the topics that are then discussed in depth on the Chronicle. And she had an article last week called International Students Can't Vote, but the Stakes Are Personal. Because obviously, as we've talked about, as all international educators know, the results of this election will make our lives either continue to make them a living hell, or one that will give us a little bit more breathing space and hopefully time to regroup and attack a future industry that is much more friendly to who we are and what we do in international education. So the article Karen writes for the Chronicle this past week calls international students unexpected activists. Giving you some great examples of how international students, even though they can't vote, are getting involved and support and encouraging their classmates to support measures that support them. And this is something that certainly is the idea of them wanting to feel welcome here in the U.S. They oftentimes feel it on their campuses. They feel it from their classmates, from their communities that they live in. But they don't feel it from necessarily the administration. We've gone through the examples over the last 4 years of what this administration has done and continues to do to try and upend and severely restrict the lives of international students on this on our campuses and in this country. Karen's article certainly shares what international students' feelings are related to the administration. But I think what really comes out of it is how important it is for that our international students' voices are also heard. Even though they don't get a vote, they do certainly have bring great value to our campuses, to our country, and have enriched our lives. Anyone who's been in international education will tell you they are a better person because of their experiences they've had with international students over the years. And certainly I'm in that category. International students don't want to study here anymore in the U.S. That's another article that came out of The Nation this past week. And this is impacting not just our students currently in the U.S., but those that are outside looking to potentially come. What have they seen over the last 4 years? We've documented before the travel bans, the edging away at ability to stay in the country, long processing delays for OPT for those that are finishing the degrees hoping for work. Other areas, increased processing fees, increased restrictions, the current attempt to eliminate DS, duration of status, that allows international students the flexibility to take the time that they need to finish their degrees and continue on without having to reapply for a visa outside the country or be asked to leave the country to renew their visa to come back in. So this whole process has become very cumbersome for international students, and there's a growing sense of unease and dread in some circumstances that what's next. And if we have another 4 years of the current administration, there are likely attempts to further restrict OPT, eliminate STEM perhaps, and further reduce the competitive advantage that the U.S. has had in years past, and restrict the opportunities for international students. Something that the U.K. experienced certainly in 2012 when their post-study work visa was eliminated, and that led to a significant downturn in their international student trends for 4 or 5 years before they have gone back up recently. And with the reintroduction of post-study work, you've seen interest pop up again in India and other countries, and China as well. So this is a continuing trend that we've seen here in the U.S. that what has happened with this administration has put off international students, future international students, from the largest sending countries in significant ways. And it has also led to a knock-on effect for future years of students coming in that have only heard the bad experiences that students have in getting to the United States, in maintaining their status, and having issues with OPT that have popped up much more regularly over the last 4 years than they had previously in the previous eight. So what we're looking at now for prospective students looking at the United States, they see a country that has been increasingly restrictive, and in real and perceived ways, in terms of rhetoric, certainly the perception is we're not as welcoming a place as we used to be. And the reality is that there have been some very significant roadblocks put in place. The global pandemic has thrown everybody into flux. And that's not just the United States. It's been every country that has received students with travel bans in place, limited flights, pandemic restrictions. Countries have actually had it much worse than the United States in terms of travel restrictions for inbound international students. You've seen Australia had a 98% collapse in their market since March this year. You've seen New Zealand have been completely closed off since March this year. Canada has severely restricted entry. They're just now starting to reopen, but there are administrative hurdles that institutions still must clear before they can be allowed to re-enroll students on their campuses. So international students, that is. So the pandemic is just on top of everything else, has made it a much more complex world and a much more and a world much more fraught with complications and worries and doubts for international students, particularly those that stayed in the U.S. after everything went online in March. So, how do they view our elections? They're certainly hoping for the right results for them, and for those of us in international education field. There is only one result that's going to make our lives easier or less stressful. We always have stressful lives in international ed because of the nature of our business, but certainly our lives will be, with a certain result, will be made much less stressful. And we're all hoping for that. But from the student perspective, they certainly feel that probably more acutely than we know, and we'll give them credit for. Now, next up, I want to talk about advocacy. Now, because we're talking about elections, and hopefully the results of our advocacy will have bear fruit in this election with elected representatives, but also in terms of advocacy work that we've been doing for years, that our field has really started to embrace more fully in terms of the need for it in what we do. We look at what's happened in July with the initial ban for returning students that would not be able to study on campus if their schools were all online. That was repealed within a few short days, thankfully due to incredible advocacy efforts, lawsuits that by many universities, many states. You see similar things that happened in the past 3 years with the travel bans and legal challenges to those bans that were revised down into third and fourth versions of the ban before one that could pass Supreme Court muster was approved. You've seen with the recent proposal to eliminate duration of status, there have been over 32,000 public comments. The period just closed last week that this elimination of DS would limit students that can remain in the country, at least from their initial period, from between 2 and 4 years, depending on the program of study and where they're from, if they were coming from a country that had significant overstay rates. You also, with this proposal and I've been posting some articles that are referencing these advocacy efforts that really show our true colors in terms of where we stand as a field, in terms of fighting for our students who don't have that voice. We are their voice for them. We've seen with this recent DS battle, you've seen members of Congress, Republican members of Congress, Democratic members of House and Senate. You've seen attorney generals in 22 different states now, and the District of Columbia, that have which calls for this proposal to be withdrawn. There have been 80 councils, associations, and educational organizations that have that signed with the American Council on Education's letter urging DHS to reconsider its largely unworkable proposal. There have been some really the logic of the proposal, certainly to limit undergraduates to 4 years in a perfect world, yes, 4 years would be great for a bachelor's degree student to come in, start a degree, finish a degree, and then go on. But the average data from a National Center for Education Statistics show that the average bachelor's degree four-year program takes 4.69 years. So it puts international students in a position where they have to clear additional hurdles to finish degrees if they're not able to do so in time, and additional costs, delays in processing time. All of these things pile up on international students in the increasingly bureaucratic an administrative world that DHS has become. This would be a step too far for many international educators and many international students that would potentially be turned off coming to the United States even more than what they might have already done, have been able to do so. I focus on this DS battle and the advocacy piece involved here to show that it does make a difference. It can make a difference. We're making a difference as we show our unified front in opposing these things. This is also true I've got a particular article from Wisconsin showing the Wisconsin Attorney General has joined that 22-state coalition to oppose the change to DS. And it also just is something that you see getting out into the not just the national media and international ed news, but also some of the state outlets that see what's happening with this proposal that has impacts on their communities, on their colleges, that they've had enough. They're standing up and saying no. So universities have rallied their own leaders to put pressure on their elected leaders to oppose these kinds of very deleterious punishments that I think many of us in international ed would see these see what the administration is doing as clearly wrong-headed. You see this also with a proposal that was announced back in June to further restrict H-1Bs. We saw the ban on them, on new H-1Bs through the end of 2020. There's a new rule that has been proposed that actually would eliminate the lottery for H-1B skilled worker visas that currently provides a lottery system to award them rather than merit. This process would be maximizing the H-1B cap allocations, and this is from the Trump administration's proposal, so that more likely would these positions would go to the best and brightest, and they're defining that as those employers that offer the higher wages. So the challenge would be, for these H-1B allocations, that international students that maybe have gotten only a year, maybe up to 3 years of work experience if they've done STEM, would have a reduced chance of competing for those higher wage H-1B caps in this new world. Now, it does not affect universities in terms of their ability to hire. They've always had an exemption from the cap, H-1B cap that exists for hiring faculty and such. But there have been many universities that have filed suit opposing this change as well for other reasons beyond that. So it's good to see that universities are coming together and fighting and showing our true colors and what we value on our campuses. In terms of international education, this is certainly an important piece of that puzzle. So when we look at this, look at the value of international education in what we do, those that are on the ground, the international recruiters, admissions officials, international student advisors, directors and deans of international education on campus, we certainly get it. We get the value of having international students come to our campuses, of sending our U.S. students abroad to have those experiences and bring them home, to give those U.S. students who can't travel abroad the opportunity to interact with international students in the classroom, to learn about the wider world that they're going to be entering when they graduate and seek gainful employment. We even encourage them to go abroad, our U.S. students to go abroad and work as part of their study abroad experiences or time abroad experiences. So those institutions that get it and embrace it, the international educators that are involved at those institutions, they get that this is a big, bright, beautiful world when we look at it the right way, and can be for our students and for students coming here. But what university leaders don't always get, and I'm talking about the presidents and the provosts, unless they're international themselves or have that kind of significant background, you far too often university leaders, and it's not just a U.S. problem. It happens at other in other countries as well. University leaders don't grasp the true impact of the international student mobility race that we're all involved in, and the level of competitiveness and how that's changed in the last 5 to 10 years, in the last 3 years even. We see new forces coming into the marketplace to recruit students. We know the pie of students studying outside their home countries has certainly expanded, has doubled in the last 20 years, but there's also been an increased number of players who are eager to have a piece of that pie, an increasingly larger piece of that pie. We've talked about how China has become such a driving force, not just in outbound student mobility, but in inbound student mobility, that they are now the second or third leading destination for international students, and their efforts through the Belt and Road Initiative have led over the last 15 years to huge investments in South Asia, in Africa, and even into Europe to try and have that soft power influence that will eventually bring students from those countries to China, and that's working. With the worst kept secret, well, it's actually the best kept secret in international ed, is that when you look at some of the emerging markets, and for the U.S., Africa has been one of those emerging markets that more and more colleges are investing in terms of a destination as a recruitment source market for students as well as educational exchange. But what's happened in the last 5 years is China. The U.S. had been second in next to France for as a destination for international students for a number of years. But what you've seen in the last 5 years is China has come in and completely outpaced, outrun the U.S. and France in terms of becoming a destination for African students. And that's down largely to scholarship programs that they've put in place to attract students from those countries to China for university study, and the investments that that country has made in those in infrastructure projects and educational programs in those countries in Africa, South and East Asia. You've seen the corresponding growth in students from those countries going to China. So it's really a world that is vastly different than it was 5-10 years ago in terms of where students are going and where students are coming from. Though we all know India and China and India in that order are the largest sources for the United States and many countries around the world in one of those two orders. You see other destinations or other source countries coming up. You also see other destination markets coming up where students are going. You see, particularly with the pandemic, you've seen an increase in students staying closer to home, where Chinese students might be going more regional to Southeast Asia than they might have been going abroad in as large a numbers as they had previously. Is that a temporary thing, or is that kind of a growing trend? I see that similarly in South and East Asia, that students staying closer to home. And since that's where 75% of international mobile students are coming from, Asia, it's really important for institutions to have a focus on that region and understand that region well. And this last article from University World News suggests university leaders need to step up their geopolitical analysis because of the implications of policies that they haven't put in place, recruitment strategies that they may or may not be aware of, or funding to the level that they need to be funded. Collective support for international measures isn't always as strong, say, perhaps as it is in Australia. Now, you look at Australia, and they've seen since March, when everything shut down there at the beginning of their academic term, you saw 100,000 Chinese students not be able to enter the country because of the travel restrictions that were put in place. Many of them were able to study from home that would have normally been on campus, but there are issues and challenges with that as well, as we've seen with access to and to all the documents they need for classes, and some censorship going on of documents that the Chinese government would not want their citizens to have access to as part of this. You see the restrictions that the U.S. has put in place. But with regard to Australia, they completely shut down. They had 98% drop in their, 99% probably, is in international students coming into the country since March. They are only now thinking about reopening in January, as is New Zealand, with very strict quarantine requirements and limited test programs being trialed now, so that when the switch is, or the tap is completely turned open again, there will be a plan in place that can make that transition easier. But having leadership at institutions that understand all the powers that be and players in the world that are impacting the international piece of it and how universities are positioned is a vital piece that not, particularly in the U.S., I think is a, other than a few of the most elite schools that have been doing transnational education for years, they get it. And they're able to switch tacks fairly easily. For example, the colleges that were able to have plans in place for this fall for their large cohorts of Chinese students to still begin at their education, but not necessarily on campus, at the home campus. They had other options through partners overseas or through third parties that they were able to arrange education to be to start for those new students. So there's a lot of challenges and room for growth, frankly, in this area for university leaders in the United States. I certainly hope that the day is coming when more universities that are serious about doing international right will have the opportunity to take into account these other external factors beyond their own borders of their state, beyond the own borders of their country, that truly impact what they do and their institution's place in the larger scope of international education. Hopefully that day is coming. Slowly but surely we'll get there, one institution at a time. And that's certainly our goal at SMIE, working with institutions that have a broader goal to internationalize, to improve their international student numbers and do it right, and have the markets identified and recruited specifically for their campus. And it takes time. It's not an overnight thing, as anyone who's been in the business more than a minute knows. And it does take a multi-level, multi-platform approach to do well. And that's what we're here for at SMIE, and we hope to bring more of your campuses into the fold to understand all the relative variables that will impact the bottom line for you in terms of international students on your campuses. So that's all we have for today. Thanks again for joining us, and keep the faith, everybody. We will get there in the end. And have a wonderful day and an incredible week. Cheers.